joining us. We're going to get started here in just a minute. The first hour is the power hour, and looks like questions are starting to pile in pretty heavy for that. Second hour will be general questions. So if you want to jump in, I would highly recommend you press one on your phone pretty quick. The sooner you do, the better your chances of getting through. And we'll try to get to as many calls as we can. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Joining me today from Pittsburgh Power, we've got Bruce and Leroy and John. And this is the show where we take your calls and answer your questions about fuel mileage, troubleshooting, upgrades, modifications, performance, horsepower, and we explore new cutting-edge technology. If you've got a question, all you have to do is pick up the phone and give us a call. We'll talk about it here, and we're going to get to the calls and questions in just a couple minutes. Let's see. John, Leroy, Bruce. Hey, guys. Welcome back.
Hey.
What's going on, Kevin?
Thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure.
Great to have you here. What's new and exciting this week?
Well, we've got a couple new things. We've got a new intake manifold for the 2012 through 2016 ISX Cummins. It's made by Full Tilt for us. We're one of their master distributors. Full Tilt also makes our manifolds, our exhaust manifolds, but they make this intake manifold. And what they found was cylinders 1, 2, and 6 were actually starving for air. And by redesigning this intake manifold, not only did they lower the NOx, they gained 20 horsepower, but on fleet trucks, there's about 25 of them out on test right now. On fleet trucks with company drivers, we're getting 2 to 3 tenths mile per gallon increase. But with owner operators, we're seeing a steady half mile per gallon improvement. And this manifold at only 5 PSI, see on the flow bench, they can only get it to 5 because it flows so much air, but it's flowing 200 CFM more, 5 PSI. Think what it's doing at 30 PSI.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. You know, Bruce, I remember you and I talking a long time ago about modifying intake and you know, the combustion chamber and the way sometimes we do on gas engines and see improvements. And there wasn't, you know, any real improvement. So it's interesting to see they've gone to the manifold to improve flow.
To the intake manifold, yes. Some of these new intake manifolds are a little bit on the light, on the skimpy side, especially when they went to EGR. So now by redesigning this manifold, and it's about the same price of an exhaust manifold, it's going to be right around $1,600. But for a half a mile per gallon increase, lower NOx, and lower emissions and better fuel mileage, it's worth it. Plus you gain 20 horsepower.
Can't beat that. That sounds very exciting. You said that's the which year of the ISX?
2012 through 2016.
Excellent.
And then I want to mention we did another tune on a 450 horse ISX 2016 that was doing 4.5 and 5 mile per gallon. Dave Warden is his name. It's in a Lone Star International. He's fairly new to trucking since 2008, and he's from Michigan. And right now, I think he's calling into the show because he's out in Oklahoma with this truck. But we took it from a 450 to a little over 600. I think it's 636 flywheel horsepower now. We gained 400 foot-pound of torque. from 1,400 to 1,800 foot-pounds. He's over 6 miles to the gallon. Now, this, we just did this Friday night, okay? He said the truck is totally awesome. He's running at 73 miles an hour right now, only using 5 pounds of boost. Leroy has programmed that turbo, so whenever you're hardly giving it any throttle, the turbo opens up and drops the back pressure, and there we gain our fuel mileage and lose exhaust temp. He said now instead of being the slowest truck in the hill, he's out in the hammer lane going by everybody. So he may be calling in, so tell Lisa to, if she sees a Dave Warden calling in, the last four of his phone numbers, 1465, please bring him on the air.
Will do, but I'd have to tell Bridget that because Bridget does all our call screening now.
I tell Bridget to do that. Yeah, I can't be right all the time.
That's right. That's right. So
the older I get, the more I'm wrong sometimes. So
yeah, well, yeah, I just figure the more times I'm wrong, the more I'm going to learn anyway. So
that's right.
That's true. So anyway, John and Leroy are on here, and Leroy might want to talk a little bit more about that program.
That one wasn't as beefy as the other ones we've done. So if he's passing a whole lot of trucks out there, then there's a whole lot of weak trucks out there. That's all I got to say. It only did, 520 to the ground? So
it was about 550, wasn't it?
No, it was 520. It was. Okay. I did that more on the
fuel mileage
side than the power. So if he's blowing by trucks, then there's a lot of weak trucks out there.
Well, that was still almost 175 horsepower increase.
I mean, it's respectable. It's no means a destroyer, but yeah, it's there's a lot of work that goes into that.
Let's start with a 450.
Yeah,
the beauty of this is that, and again, that might be news to some of our listeners. We do this and get this performance and mileage with all of the emission controls in place and working. So nothing is shut off, nothing's deleted, everything is there. We have yet to test it, but it takes care of itself, especially the Cummins. It would know if it was dirty. It would set lights, so it would have indicators there that would tell us it was dirty. But I'd love to do some testing on it on the emissions equipment just to see exactly what it does. But yeah, we're doing this and let everybody know that we're doing this with everything in place.
Yeah, a lot of people are surprised by that.
Yeah, they're really surprised when we tell them.
They're like, what'd you shut off? Nothing. Kind of all there.
You know, we need to get this guy in and put the new intake manifold on this truck.
Yeah, it'd be a good candidate for that. He could get us some data on that. I've been dying to put that on the truck. We just haven't had the right one here to do it with yet.
Well, Bruce, let's talk a little bit about some return on investment. Do you guys have an idea what his total bill was for that change?
$2,250.
So
yeah, he didn't do anything else.
We didn't do anything else. That was all we did to it. Yeah.
Yeah, so he invested $2,250, and we went roughly from about 4.5, you said, up to about 6.
Let's say we went from 5 to 6.
Yeah, so for some, and I'll adjust my numbers then. For some people, they would say, oh, but it's only getting 6. And we talk all the time about trucks getting 8, 9, and that's wonderful. But when you make a change and you go from, say, 8.5 to 9.5, that's impressive, but the savings aren't nearly as good as if you go from 5 to 6. Based on today's fuel price, he invested a little over $2,000, and in his first year at the fuel price today, he's going to save over $10,000 on one change, $10,000. If he went from 4.5 to 6, he'd be saving almost $17,000.
But now think about this, though. He's pulling a van. He only has $32,000 in the. It's a reefer, actually, but he's running along at 73 mile per hour. Now, we only finished this Friday night. He was empty. He went home to Michigan. He loaded and went back to York, PA on Saturday, and now he's back from York and on his way out to Oklahoma. So he's still having fun. Keep in mind, he's he's only like 48 years old, and he loves to ride his Harley Davidson's pretty fast too. He gets a new Harley every year, and they have three trucks. The fourth one's on order. They have private hauls, so he's enjoying it, and that's the thing. That's why he's going 73, because he's having fun. He's enjoying it. For a year and a half, he's been driving a truck that was a sled. By the way, he spent thousands of dollars going in and out of Cummins and International trying to get it to run better. And he has lots of compliments to say about the Lone Star. He said it's a very quiet and very comfortable truck. He's very happy with the Lone Star International.
Other than the fact,
great.
Other than the fact that it looks like a PT Cruiser on steroids.
Oh, come on. Come on.
I was trying to place what that thing looked like. I think you nailed it there. It does look like a PT Cruiser.
No, it doesn't.
It does.
Do you know what a PT Cruiser looks like?
Yeah, I know what one looks
like.
It
doesn't look anything like that. Too hard.
Awesome.
Well, Kevin, to me, it looks like a 40 Ford, 39 or 40 Ford. And I think the look's okay myself, so I'm all right.
It was.
That.
Yeah.
It was actually modeled, and I think it might have been a 39 or 40 Ford pickup that it was actually modeled after. So you might be right, Bruce, but it still looks to me like a PT Cruiser on steroids. So, and I have to fight all the time on that one because Lisa loves that truck, but it's not for me. Hey, we're going to get to more right after this break. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Leroy and John with me. So, Bruce, let's talk about this. How many people have bought that same truck and for whatever reason, it gets 4.5 or 5 miles to the gallon, and we hear this all the time. They take it back. They try things. Nothing really seems to work much. I hear this all the time. And then they just live with it because they don't know what else to do. They've tried. Nobody seems to be able to fix it. There's no way that truck should get 4.5 miles to the gallon, but we know it happens all the time. You know, you got him to 6 with one change. I'm positive that if we worked with him for a day or two, we could get it to 7. Think of all the things we haven't done to that truck yet. So 7 would be kind of a no-brainer. We could do that in a day or two. And the difference at today's fuel price of a truck getting 4.5 and you just live with it, or you go invest a couple $1,000 and we do get it up to 7. I think 8 isn't out of the question, but if we got it to 7, that saves $24,000 a year in fuel. That means 5 years or so of that fuel savings and the truck was free.
That's correct. And we need to get our full tilt Pittsburgh Power manifold on it and the intake manifold, the fleet air filter, the fast fuel system. So we're just getting started.
Exactly.
But the main thing was to get it, to get the horsepower and torque up so that he can enjoy driving it.
Absolutely. And the change you made is probably the single biggest improvement you're going to get. Everything now is going to be smaller and incremental. But there's still a ton of stuff we could do. So I think 7 would be a slam dunk. And if I owned this truck, my goal would be 8. And when you get to 8, you start talking about $30,000 a year difference in fuel. And that's at today's fuel price, which is still fairly cheap. We're about $2.40 a gallon right now. If we get back up to the $4, which will happen, can just stupid numbers.
That's right.
That'll pay for that new Harley of his every year.
There you go.
That's right.
Yeah. It, not only the Harley, you could do a 2-week road trip, and that would be free too.
Kevin, when we want to get you into a new Harley, his would be a great one for you to buy because it's very low miles. It's only a couple thousand miles a year, and it would be like new, just perfect for you and Lisa.
There you go. Yeah.
Why wait?
Yep.
Why buy now?
That's right.
Okay.
All right. What do you say we get to some phone calls?
Let's see if Dave happens to be on the waiting list there.
Well, I'll look for him. Let's go to North Dakota. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, a few questions for you guys. I've heard you talk in the past about the Cummins engine, the 10% silent D rate if you don't fill your DEF all the time. Would you shut that off when you do your ECM tune?
Yeah, that's one of the silent D rates we turn off.
Okay. Second, I've heard some conflicting reports on synthetic oil in a Cummins. What's your opinions on that?
I'm personally a fan of it. I don't know. I've personally not read the recommendations not to go synthetic or with mineral oil beyond break-in. And I believe in that, too. Some of the synthetics are just a little too slick for break-in. You won't get the rings in the way you need to on synthetic sometimes. But once the rings are in, there's zero reason to not use synthetic, in my opinion. That's a personal opinion. But if Kevin's got any more on that, or if anything's been written by Cummins, I'm not sure about. You will find that engines that are prone to leak and such, the synthetics will find their way out of them a whole lot, a lot more than the mineral oils, too. So that's another reason some people shy away from them.
Okay.
Yeah,
other question you guys have.
There, real quick, because... John, it's good to have you around because I've been a huge fan of synthetic oil for a long time, and I keep fighting this in the industry that, you know, these rumors pop up. I mean, if you go to most of the OEM engine manuals, most of the manuals recommend synthetic oil as a premium product. Detroit has always said synthetic oil is a better oil. I don't know why we seem to argue it in this industry. Nobody else seems to argue that a synthetic oil is just a better product. Now, if you've got a lot of ring and that kind of stuff and you're burning a ton of oil, well, then, yeah, maybe go back to a conventional oil. But when you have a healthy engine, I can't see any oil that's going to perform better than a full synthetic.
It's not going to. It just isn't.
And that,
the synthetic bases and the friction modifiers are just better. Yeah, it's just there's no two ways about it. Our conversation yesterday, Kevin, about data and quantifying things, and the oils are something we've tested extensively in racing, and we see it in our temperature data on transmissions and engines and engine oil, and we see it on the stopwatch. We see it on the data. It's proven. It's not to me it's not a question.
So one of the best explanations I got from an oil engineer, he said this might be oversimplification, but it helps understand. He said, if you look at a conventional oil base, all the molecules look like spaghetti, like a pile of spaghetti. They're all kind of wrapped around each other, and it's kind of thicker and clumpy. And he said, when we refine to a synthetic base, it's like laying all those strands of spaghetti parallel and straight. He said that's kind of the difference in, so that's what gives it the thinner but stronger film strength. So it's a lighter, thinner oil, so the parts move through it easier, but even though it's got less film thickness, it's actually stronger.
Kevin, that's
why I'm a firm believer of the oil myself, but I guess it was a recommendation when I had my truck at your shop out there, and somebody out there had said that Cummins had a third-party test that said that it wasn't a good idea.
Well, I don't know who would have said that. That certainly didn't come from us. Because years ago, Kevin, in regards to what you said about the spaghetti, back probably 30 years ago, I was told that conventional oil, think of ball bearings of all different sizes. That's mineral oil. And then synthetic oil would be all the ball bearings would be all the same size.
Yeah, that's a good explanation. And I just went through the two new oil standards that are coming out, the two new APIs. I worked with Chevron pretty extensively on those, so I got a chance to spend a lot of time with their engineers. And the thing there is, not only are they moving to synthetic, they're moving to really, really light viscosities now. And they're building the new engines to handle these. In fact, this is the first time we've ever had two API classifications, because they are building such a specialized oil for the new engines that they weren't even able to really make it backwards compatible. That's how drastic the change is on that oil. So they kept another API that is backwards compatible to the older engines. So if you look at the new API classifications, one of them is really only recommended for like 2017 engines and beyond.
I have one other question for you that you guys have covered in a previous show about the Lucas additive for the DPF cleaner. Have you tested any of that yet?
We have not.
Okay.
I'll have to give Forrest Lucas a call and talk to him about that. I have seen that in stores, but we have not tested it. I can tell you, Forrest Lucas and I worked several RV shows and spoke together, shared the podium, and he told me that if he can't make the very best of a product, he won't make it at all. So I would have no problem using any of the Lucas Oil products. And if I bought a new pickup with the Cummins with a DPF, I would put his additive in it for the DPF.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's see, we're going to head off to New Jersey. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you guys? I got a quick question. I have a 2000 Kenworth, the W9, with a pre-emission common tire set. My question is, can I get the turbo thing you guys do for the Series 60 into this motor, or it's only specific for Detroit?
We're not going to be able to do that on that 570 ECM. It doesn't have the parameters built in to control a VG. So you would either have to have a separate engine controller to run the turbo alone, or you would just basically build an 870, so a newer EGR truck. But that ECM won't support it.
Oh, okay. All right. I see what you guys are saying. Okay, I see what you mean. Oh, okay, so it's not going to work in a pre-emission truck.
No, unfortunately, it won't work.
All right, no problem. Well, thank you, guys.
Yep.
All right. Call, there's the music. That means I've got to get to a break. But don't go away. We'll be right back with more stuff. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Leroy with me from Pittsburgh Power. We're taking your calls and answering your questions. We're going to head off to Robert. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Kevin. I had a couple questions, and actually you added another one with your earlier topic. First of all, I have a 2012 Freightliner Cascadia. I just bought it in July. I told myself I ain't going to do a delete on this one like the last two. less than 30 days, $6,000 repair I was looking at, I deleted. But when I did, it went from an operating temperature around 200 most of the time to, on a 60-degree day, it's 150. On a 40-degree day, it doesn't even get hardly to 100 degrees. Would that definitely be a thermostat, or would there be something else I should look at?
You're talking about your coolant temperature is running that cold?
Yeah.
Whenever you run an engine that cold, you have accelerated wear or degradation on your cylinder liners. So you really need to see what's going on there. And I would probably start with the thermostat or go back to the people that did the delete on it and say, hey, you know, I'm running way too cold. You want to be at 180.
That's what I thought. I mean, even now it's like six, I don't know, I'm in Pennsylvania. And I'm running at 140 down the interstate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back
way too
in
cold.
the mid 70s, I was with Loftus Engineering, and we built plate mill and strip mill slab furnaces for steel mills. And I asked the one engineer, keep in mind I was 25 years old, I said, how do you know how thick to make that wall? And he said he knew I was into engines and racing cars. So he compared the thickness of a furnace wall and how much brick was going to be in there and how much steel to the cylinder walls of an engine. And he drew a graph of how you want it to be from inside at the hottest to the coolest on the outside. And I wish I could draw it over the phone. I could draw it in person or even send it to you on email. But you need to get that temperature up because you're way too cold on the outside and you're going to start eating those cylinder walls.
Okay. And then the next, also I was wondering if that would negatively affect my mileage.
No, yes.
That's pretty cool.
Bruce,
yeah, you've got, oh, go ahead.
According to Detroit, and I don't think it would make a big difference on different engines, but according to Detroit and their testing, every 10 degrees cooler from optimal is about a 1% decrease in fuel economy.
Okay, where my mileage is bad then. And then the other question I had that you created, that manifold, will that work on a deleted? Will it have the same effect?
The intake manifold we were talking about is for an ISX. The exhaust
right, that's
manifold. Oh, you have an ISX?
Yeah,
the intake manifold will work for you.
Okay, even with it deleted, it still increase the
sure.
mileage?
Absolutely, okay. Because the air's coming in. You know, it doesn't know whether you're EGR or not.
Okay. I'll try to get
in. You should have brought the truck to us and left it stock and let us fix it the proper way, and that way you'd be okay no matter where you went.
And in less than a month, it broke down. They pulled it in. They replaced the intake and outtake knocks and then turned around, ran the test again, and said I needed a... catalyst for another $4,700. I took it across town for $4,500, and I don't have the headaches anymore.
See, what we do is force the regen and do the program, force the regen and clean it all up while it's here sitting in the parking lot and on the dyno, and we have been trouble-free. God, the first one, what was the first one we did, John, to your friend with the Kenworth? How many months has that been?
That was back in January.
In January,
so we're getting,
he has not had a check engine light yet. Yeah.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Yep.
Let's go to Pennsylvania. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yep, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I've got a 2002 Freightliner Century, but it's got a 1993 12.7 liter in it.
So it's a D-Deck 2 or possibly a D-Deck 1?
D-Deck 3, I think, is what the guy told me.
In 93?
Yeah.
Looking
or
at your ECM... Looking at the ECM, is it about 2 inches thick, or is it like 3.5 to 4 inches thick?
2 inches.
Oh, that sounds like a three to me.
And actually, okay. I've got a DDEC 4 computer on it.
All right, then, okay, that's good.
Here's my issue currently. The engine didn't have Jake brakes on it when I got it. So I put the Jake brakes on it, and the wiring was there, so it was pretty easy to hook it up, but it's not working. You flip the switch, nothing happens.
That's no bueno.
Leroy?
No.
Leroy, do we have to turn it on in the ECM?
Yeah, it could have to be turned on the ECM. It depends on if it's how it's set to. If it's set to none, then yeah, nothing could happen.
Right.
But you would just have to check the program.
Okay, so I probably just need to bring it to you guys.
Yeah,
we'll make it work for you.
Yeah.
Also, I did the head gasket on the truck maybe 4 months ago. And right after I did the head gasket, the thing ran great, beautiful. And my 90-day average, I'm getting probably 6.65 fuel mileage. I put a driver in the truck. He ran it for 2 weeks, and now it runs like crap. Sounds like there's a noise coming from the turbo. I'm not real sure what that is, but the truck's running like a dog.
Again, no bueno.
No, that's definitely not good. Yeah.
No check engine light or anything. It's just not running the way that it was before I put him in it.
Right.
What's the turbo boost before and after? What was the turbo boost before when you were driving, and what is it now?
Well, it appears to be about the same. And that's another thing that's kind of weird about this is you know, I put the DDEC 4 computer on it, and I changed the boost sensor. But the boost never gets above, I think, the highest. I just pulled a hill 5 minutes ago. The highest it gets is 27.6.
Well, 500 is supposed to make 30, so.
Yeah.
You need to get that truck in here, and let's take a look at it, and let's pull the housings off the turbo and look at it and pressurize the system and look at your programs and maybe set the overhead and put it on the dyno and find out what happened and where your power went.
Okay. About how much would something like that cost? Just a ballpark.
Oh, I think you're probably, if we have to program the ECM and dyno and set the overhead, you're probably going to be about $2,400.
Okay. All right. So just call and make an appointment. I'm based out of Cleveland, Ohio, so I'm pretty close to you.
Well, okay, I'll say. Yeah, try to give us a week notice if you can, but if you can't, sometimes we can work around a 3-day notice.
Okay. All right. I will give you guys a call and make an appointment.
Sounds good.
Bueno.
Hey, Bruce, I've got a question for you. So when I first started helping people on the phone, this way before I even had a radio show, and I had a lot of tax clients, but I was helping them with fuel mileage and maintenance. I remember many, many questions I would get. Somebody would say, my truck's doing this. And I would usually have a pretty good answer. Check this. You know, it's normally this. This will probably fix it. And I've been noticing lately that the calls I get on the air when people are starting to describe what's wrong with their truck, I really don't have any answers for them anymore, because it seems like the trucks are getting so complicated that whatever the symptom might be, you could quickly run through 5 or 6 different things on a truck now that could cause those problems. So we're going to get to a break. When I come back, I want to know if that's kind of what you guys see. I mean, it's like, I almost feel like I don't really have an answer for them other than to say, you have to find somebody who knows how to troubleshoot properly, which is what we seem to be missing. But it's getting really, really difficult to answer maintenance questions on the phone for me now. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the final segment of the Power Hour. When we're done here, we're going to come back and do another hour of general questions. Looks like we've got a lot of questions on hold, but I'll keep you updated as we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get back to some calls. But before we do, Bruce, Leroy, John, you guys feel that way too, that it's just getting harder and harder to answer a maintenance question without doing a lot of troubleshooting?
It's nearly impossible, Kevin. We even struggle with it when we have a truck in the shop here sometimes. There are so many knock-on effects, and one thing that could be wrong that brings up six or seven more codes, and it's really, really difficult. So you have to use basically a troubleshooting tree all the time.
And you can't get much from people either. I mean, to troubleshoot some of these systems, it's like, oh, well, what's your turbo position at? What's your delta pressure? You know, like, I don't have a gauge for that. Well, they're not going to, but you're not going to solve the problem unless you know these types of things. So it's just hard. Yeah. You need more than a boost gauge and a pyro gauge anymore.
Well, that and experience is the big one. I mean, we'll see a problem that shows up as, you know, I can't tell you how many, you know, like the fellow that called that had his ISX deleted. You know, he went to the wrong shop, obviously. We've yet to see one that actually needed either the DOC or the DPF filter replaced. It was always something else. And they're really quick to throw that $6,000 or $7,000 part on, you know, and meanwhile, there was a tiny crack in we had one, the little bung that holds one of the pressure delta P sensors, it was cracked right around the bottom. I mean, it took me, you know, about 30 seconds with the MIG welder to fix it. And, you know, I guarantee you, had he gone somewhere, that would have been a $6,000, you know, DOC replacement or something. So, you know, you need to look at, quite often the sensors are correct and they're telling you what they're supposed to tell you. And you need to look around and not just throw parts at it. Or sensors at it. I mean, people want to blame the sensor really quick. It's like shooting the messenger. So it's...
And a lot of times these newer ECMs, they're good enough to tell you when a sensor's bad. If they see a sensor reading that's like way off, it'll throw a check engine light for it, say, you know, data incorrect or something like that. So
out of range.
It pretty much almost troubleshoots itself anymore.
But you have to know how to read it. It's tricky. You know, if it's, you know, a lot of people struggle doing web searches and some people don't. So it's definitely, you know, you need to look for key things and it takes experience. And I can't tell you this, you know, we spend a whole lot of time troubleshooting here even. I mean, we've got a truck in the shop now that we've been spending we've got a day and a half into figuring out a fan control issue. So there's, you know, and it's throughout the truck, not just on the engine end, but it's troubleshooting is an art.
And it's almost impossible nowadays without a computer.
Right.
If you don't have a laptop or any software, I don't know how you would do it.
Yeah, I don't know how you'd do it either.
So,
well, you
can't give that advice anymore.
Yeah, the trend I see now, whereas it used to be, like I said, when certainly with mechanical engines it was easy, but even the early emission engines, you still had some basic problems that when you saw a symptom, and you know, Leroy, you were just saying with a boost gauge and a pyrometer, we could usually tell a lot. You know, it gave us a pretty good direction. And now I'll get a call. They'll describe what's going on. And my answer will be, look, I could give you three or four or five or six things that could cause that. But you need to troubleshoot it so you know which one it is. You just have to find somebody that knows how to troubleshoot. And then I'll get seven more calls during the show. And they'll say, I know what it is because I have the exact same truck and it did this, that, and this is what it was. And I'll go, yeah, that's one of the five or six things I would have mentioned, but then I'll get the next call and they'll go, oh no, I have the exact same truck and it did that and it was this. And I'll go, yeah, that's kind of my point.
That's good information and those are good places to take a look, but that's part of the process. Now, keep in mind, even with all this complication, we do still have the basics, which are often overlooked. And again, we're human here too. We will as well. You know, we've spent lots of time on a dyno with everything in the world hooked up to a truck and trying different programs, and the damn thing needed a fuel filter. It had a cracked filter head and had a slight air leak. So all of the same, the original rules all apply still. Plus, you know, it's almost exponentially changed because of the electronics and the other complicated stuff on top of it. So it's, you know, all that same stuff is still there. We still have to, you know, cover the basics all the time. And it's so easy to get the, you know, have those shiny objects in that computer distract you from the basics too. It's made it, you know, it's had another level of complication that you don't realize.
Yeah, good not point. You know what?
It's not that hard.
I was,
that was sarcasm from Levi.
Yeah, I was heavily into PCs early. Like, I had my first PC, I think, in like 1983. I actually built a PC, but so I was into computers really early on, and they were, computers back then were kind of like new trucks now. They never worked right. I mean, something was always wrong. I used to spend so much time troubleshooting, and I started doing it for everybody else because everybody would call me and say, hey, my computer's doing this. What do I do? And what you just said, John, made the one thing I always had to remember was don't skip the basics. You know, it starts to get so complicated that you would dig deep looking for some crazy problem and then find out the person calling you didn't plug their computer in. You know, something just...
Yep.
Yeah. So
Kevin,
you're right.
I have a guy in Illinois. He's doing 7.2 out of a big cam Cummins right now. We can make it simple. Everybody go back to a big cam Cummins and have a boost gauge and a pyrometer, and we'll tell you everything that could be wrong with it by those two readings. Let's just keep it simple.
There you go. Can I have my 6V92 back?
No, big cam. Big cam, okay. And 4.25B. All right.
Well, yeah, so the 6V92 is my first truck. The big cam 350 was my second.
You didn't by any chance happen to find Dave Warden on the waiting list, did you, to get in?
No, let me...
Michigan phone number.
810 area code, would that be right?
Yes,
that sounds right.
Well, you know what? Let's bring it in for the last call of the day. David, welcome to the program.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, I just want to call in and thank you guys again. My truck is awesome.
Good. Glad to hear that.
And
that's cool.
What we want you to try is to slow that thing down a little bit and see if we can't get you over 6 miles to the gallon.
Now, how much fun would that be?
Yeah, that wouldn't be no fun for me.
So, Dave, tell us about the hills.
Oh, difference between night and day, Bruce. I've had this thing to Cummins in Bay City, Michigan a few times. They've tried everything from a progressive clutch to everything that they could do to this truck. This is 2016. I bought it in January and never been happy with it since. And even talked about trading it in and getting rid of it. That's how unhappy I was with it. Put it to you guys. You guys worked on it last Friday, as you know, and oh, it's not even the same truck.
That's good. So you, the 400 foot-pound of torque and the 150 horsepower, you can really tell.
Oh, Bruce, it's difference between night and day. The mileage is up about, as far as I can tell, the mileage is up about 6/10 right now. My computer is reading right now 6.6. But I'm kind of light right now, so that may go down as I get heavier. But Oh, it's totally different truck. Before I used to have to push the gas all the way to the floor just to get it to climb a hill. As I was telling you last Friday, Bruce, my leg would get sore from pushing on my gas pedal so much. And now I don't even push it to the floor at all.
Good. Have you seen the floorboard since you left here Friday night?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't. And, you know, out in Oklahoma, we have, you know, where I'm at now, we have 75-mile-an-hour speed limits for big trucks, and I have no problem doing it with the truck at all. It's great.
David, did you hear us talking about that new intake manifold?
I did.
And I'd be willing to need to try on your truck.
Hey, Bruce, from what you did to my truck already, I'm willing to let you try anything on it.
All right, let's think of the intake and the exhaust manifold and the intake manifold.
All right, you just tell me when you want it, and I'll be more than happy to bring it back to you.
Good deal.
Okay. Well, next time you're going across Pennsylvania, give us a call.
So, you know, Bruce, I love this because he summed everything up in about three sentences there. If we pick a couple sentences out, bought a 2016, never liked it right from day one, took it back to Cummins, and he wasn't going back to a truck dealer. I tell people, look, at least go back to an engine shop when you have an engine problem. He went back to Cummins. They tried all kinds of things, still wasn't happy, to the point where he said he was ready to trade it in. And now he summed it all up in one sentence. After he took the truck to you guys at Pittsburgh Power, he says, the truck's just awesome. What more could you ask for? Yeah. Great stuff.
All right.
There's the music. That means I've got to get out of here. We'll see you next week with more of the Power Hour. Thanks to the guys from Pittsburgh Power. And we'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. From Kevin Rutherford. All right, so we're going to do a second hour. I'm looking at the questions, and there's quite a few, but I think if you press one on your phone right now, you might be able to get through in the second hour. I'll keep you updated as we go. Let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, you've come to the right place. We'll talk about it here on the air. These weeknight hours go pretty quick, and we've got lots of questions lined up already. So I'm going to get right to the phones. We're going to start off in Louisiana. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Good. What can I help you with?
You've got an oil sample there for me.
I do. Tell me what year and what engine we're looking at here.
It's an 07 Freightliner Columbia with 06 Series 60.
All right, so we've got a little over a million miles on the engine and about 82,000 on the oil. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So for the most part, and we've got lots of history, since you've got 80,000 miles on the oil, I can see a couple samples back. For the most part, everything was looking really good. Like there were no real problems showing up anywhere. And all of a sudden, we had a jump in soot. And then because of that, the wear metals went up some. Anything going on in this last 20,000 miles or so that would give any other indication at loss of power, loss of fuel economy, anything?
Fuel economy has gone down about 0.2 over the last since the last oil sample. But for the most part, as far as power, haven't really noticed anything. I kind of attributed that to I had it into Pittsburgh Power, and they had to do some tinkering with the power box. I've since cut the power box back down to level 1, and hopefully that'll help correct that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not sure why the soot decided to jump up. Nothing else is giving me any clues. Do you have a Fleet air filter in this?
Yes.
Is it clean?
Clean. It'll be due for another cleaning in about another 10,000 miles.
Yeah, so that's probably not it. I would probably, when was the last time the overhead was set?
That was done back in February when Pittsburgh Power put the cam in it.
I might go back and recheck the overhead. I might, you know what I might do though, just in case. You've gotten 82,000 miles out of this oil. You certainly got your money's worth. I might change the oil and run one more sample cycle before I spend any money on trying to find the problem, because it's pretty minor. I mean, it's not anything I wouldn't want to spend a lot of money chasing it. And after 82,000, it could just be that we got a little contamination. I think I would change the oil, go through one more sample cycle, and let's see what happens.
Okay. Yeah. The other thing is, this last Sunday show, I think I was the first person to register for the CMC this year.
Oh, good. That's an exciting thing. We did get a lot of signups, and I think you were in there registering before I even finished what I was saying.
Yeah, I finished registering about 5 minutes before you actually announced it.
Got it. That's what I thought. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you there.
I'm looking forward to being there. Past 2 years I've been there, I've really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Great stuff. Yeah, let's not do anything drastic on this, because that result isn't bad after 82,000, but let's kind of do a reset on the oil and then see what the next sample looks like. Let's go to Wisconsin. Bill, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Kevin, for taking my call.
Hey, you're welcome. What can I help you with today?
Earlier that we're listening to a show earlier, and the guy was tickled pink about being able to do 73 and blow by everybody. My experience is that 70, you're going to blow by everybody. But then again, I ran out west.
Exactly.
Get to my question. I know you always say if you have to eat fast food, pick the burger you want, pick the salad you want, and stack them.
Yeah.
Without the bun.
Yep.
I'm wondering about a different chain, because you did reference the Golden Arches. About Arby's. I mean, they've got, like they recently released, a thing called the pork belly sandwich from their smokehouse line.
Right. I actually like that, and I'll tell you why. Pigs, I tend to eat pork out more often than beef or chicken. And I'll tell you why. I think pigs are a more adaptable animal to a different diet. Cows should really only be eating one thing. Cows should be eating grass. That's it. They should be eating fast-growing green grass, nothing else. And if you feed them anything else, it affects the quality of the meat pretty heavily. Chickens, kind of the same way. Chickens should be eating a natural diet outside, which would include a lot of bugs, and bugs are protein. So technically, chickens are omnivores. They should be eating protein and vegetation. And when you pick up, you know, what they consider the healthiest eggs in the supermarket, they always say fed a vegetarian diet. Well, I don't want those eggs. Chickens aren't vegetarians. So, but pigs are pretty adaptable. Pigs can eat a lot of different kinds of food and still be pretty healthy. So if I can't get like pastured chickens or grass-fed beef, which is next to impossible from a restaurant, I'll lean towards pork when I can get it. I just think it's probably a better choice if we can't get real good quality meat. The other thing that's interesting about Arby's, they'll put any one of their sandwiches on a lettuce wrap, and they're actually pretty good at it. So if I have to eat fast food, which I just don't do very often, I will tend to lean towards Arby's and do a lettuce wrap. Or like I say, in the other ones, I might do a salad and a burger. But I think a pork option when you're eating out is a better way to go.
Okay. Good. Sounds like I accidentally did something right.
There you go. That's right.
Okay. Well, I'll let you go so you can take some other calls.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Let's head off to, you know what? Actually, we're heading into a break. So I think instead of starting a call and then interrupting it, I think I'm going to take us into the break. And when we come back, we'll get to more of your calls and questions. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. CMC registration for 2017 is now open. And that is our next event. It's going to be September 17th of 2017. Registration's open. You can go to the website, letstruck.com. You can't miss it. You'll see registration right there on the homepage. We do have very special new pricing for spouses this year. For years, people have asked if there was a spouse discount, and we were finally able to implement a pretty hefty spouse discount. Actually, based on the old price to our new spousal pricing, you actually save, if I'm thinking right, it's about $800 a couple, if I have that right. So check that out. That's a great new offer we're able to bring to the table. And so far we've had a lot of spouses take advantage of that, because we're excited about that, because we know when the spouse comes, there's a better overall outcome. So I love seeing husband and wife teams come, or spouses who may be at home but are a part of the business. We think that there is a much better outcome, and we're excited that we can offer that discount to take advantage of it. We also have a payment plan, so it's only going to cost you about $100 to lock up your registration, and then you have 18 months to pay it all off. We'll be right back. Stick around. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Head on over there and get registered for the 2017 CMC. It's also kind of been expanded to a six-day program now. The 5 days are paid. The Sunday prior to the event, which is the 17th of September, the Sunday prior, we are now making an open house. We'll have all of our vendors there, and we are opening it up to the public. Sunday is free for everybody. And then the paid event is Monday through Friday. We have lots of new and exciting stuff we'll be announcing as we go. But the most important thing is that you get over there and get registered. You don't want to miss this. And by the way, we're back in Council Bluffs, Iowa at the Mac Center. Let's go to Georgia. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. You should have a profit gauge report, and I just kind of want you to go over it with me to let me know where I can improve or anything like that, to kind of give you a little information about my operation. I'm a dedicated BCO driver in mostly Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, and Georgia, and on a dedicated account, and that's pretty much where I'm at. And what I'm thinking about doing, and I wanted to get your opinion, is that eventually I'm going to step out and I'll get my own authority, and start running up under my own authority, and you know, and hearing the rates and everything like that that's going on. I've been studying them, been watching them, and I just kind of wanted you to compare that to my operation of what I'm doing now.
Got it. So a couple interesting things here. First, if you were to stay doing what you're doing, I'm not sure there's anything we could improve. I mean, you're really doing a good job of managing your expenses. Your fuel cost is only 27 cents a mile. We're not going to get that much lower. Your maintenance costs 8 cents a mile. We're not going to get that lower. I can guarantee you that. And those are our two big numbers. You're really not wasting any money anywhere. You've done a really excellent job of controlling your expenses. Now, your net profit per mile is 59 cents. That's nothing to sneeze at. That's not a bad rate today. But here's what's really interesting. You've managed to generate 59 cents a mile profit on only $1.19 in revenue. That's where that we would have to change the revenue. We can't change the expenses. You're already doing all of that. If you're on a dedicated run, you probably don't have any opportunity to improve the revenue. This is what the revenue is. And I get it. It's very regional. Southeast probably keeps you home a lot. This, you know, wouldn't be a bad gig at all. Some people might love this. But if you were to go out and get your own authority, it would not be difficult to take that $1.19 in revenue to, say, $1.60 in revenue for all miles. I mean, that's 40 more cents. Having your own authority might increase your cost by 15 cents a mile. Let's even say 20. Just to be on the safe side, that would mean instead of roughly 60 cents a mile net profit, you'd be at 80. That's a big difference, because if you think on just a 100,000 mile year, that means another $20,000 in your pocket.
Right. Okay. That's really something to think about, and you know, and watching the markets and the, you know, the downswing and the if it go up, it may go down. You know, I don't know whether I should just kind of ride this out to next year or just go heels over heels into it now, because you know I have the money saved up to where I can purchase a trailer cash and be able to operate and run.
Yeah, so here's I love questions like this, because I don't see a bad decision here. Like I said, if you stay doing exactly what you're doing, there would people that would kill for that. a fairly regional operation in the Southeast. You're not going to deal with a ton of bad weather. You're close to home all the time. It's dedicated. You know what you're doing. And you're clearing almost 60 cents a mile. That's pretty hard to beat. But if you do decide to go get your own authority, based on what I see, you're running a good business. Your expenses are controlled. I'm 90% sure when you get your own authority, your revenue is going to go up. Your gross revenue is certainly going to go up. I think your net revenue is going to go up pretty significantly. And you're going to have to do a little more work. You know, you're going to have to, you know, work a little harder, hustle for some loads, find some brokers to build a relationship. So that's kind of the trade-off here. You could stay doing what you're doing. My guess is it's pretty simple. You've done all the hard work, and you could just kind of coast for a little bit and enjoy, you know, what you've built. Or if you're ready for a new challenge, I think it would definitely pay for itself to do it. So I love it when we have two good decisions. Either one you make, you're going to be fine.
Okay. Okay, Kevin, I do appreciate it. I'm leaning more towards going into my authority, and you know, my aim is, you know, once I get established in the authority, is find a shipper, you know, a customer, instead of going through broker, find a customer and build that relationship there, and then grow it from there.
Excellent. That's my listening? Goal.
But I appreciate the.
You're welcome. Are you listening to the podcast?
Yes, sir. Every week I listen to it faithfully with Kenny Long and Rico Muhammad. I listen to it faithfully every week.
Excellent. And that's why I think you are ready for this. You're doing the hard work. You've got your expenses under control. You're learning every week. You're paying attention to the podcast. I think you're ready to go. Let's go to Virginia. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yep, it's your turn. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Kevin. I have been on the ketogenic diet for a while now, and the benefits are unbelievable. I've always read that you should buy organic, whether it's fruit, whether it's meat, if you have an option. Now, what I do is my main protein is chicken, which I get from Whole Foods, take it home, and then we cook it, and I take it on the road.
Okay.
However, the company that makes that same chicken makes another brand, packaging everything the same thing. It's not organic, but it says no added hormones or antibiotics. And my wife is saying, listen, you're wasting money buying the organic, because really that's all that is important. And she's in the nutrition world, and she went on a conference, and they had somebody make a presentation where it's a chicken organic farmer, and they said, you know, sometimes the only label, the only reason they put the organic is because they're feeding it veggie diet. And I'm kind of conflicted, and I just wanted your opinion about it.
I'm not sure if I'm going to help you get unconflicted, because I'm a little conflicted as well. There's so much to this issue. I will tell you, though, that I will spend the extra money and I will buy organic, whether it's vegetables, fruit, meat. I will buy a better quality, or what is supposed to be a better quality, every time I can. Maybe I'm wasting money once in a while, but here's the thing. So your wife is correct. The hormones, if we get rid of those, that's excellent. If we get rid of the antibiotics, that's excellent. No question. But it still comes down to, they could still feed that chicken some really poor quality stuff. And if it's organic, now, there are some labels that have clear requirements, whether, you know, every producer is following all these things and there's anybody watching this. But if it's organic, that means that all of the feed that was given to that animal has to be organic. If it's organic, okay, it also means it has to be non-GMO. So if they are adding corn to the chicken's feed, corn is a heavily genetically modified crop. They could be adding soy to the chicken's feed, and soy is a very heavily genetically modified crop. If it's organic, they can feed corn and they can feed soy, but it can't be genetically modified. That is a requirement of organic. There can't be any GMOs. I think GMOs are way worse for us than what they're telling us. And I do everything I can possibly do to avoid anything GMO. It's one of the reasons I lean towards organic. If it says organic, it cannot be genetically modified. So that's what I think the issue with the animals and the feed is. Yeah, you can get pork or chicken and they'll say it's natural, no hormones, no antibiotics, but it could be being fed a lot of genetically modified material. And I don't want that. So I think your wife is right. I just don't know if she's looking at the whole story. And that's a big issue for me. I think the organic feed is a better quality feed, and we're going to get a better quality animal. I'll come back to you right after the break, and we'll see if that helps. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Before the break, I was talking with Mike in Virginia. Mike, does that make sense?
I think I have my answer. Thank you, sir.
Good.
It makes a lot of sense.
You're welcome. You're ready. Oh, hold on. I
can get away with it.
Go ahead with that last comment. I cut you off.
I think they can get away with a lot when they're outside the organic. The organic scheme, the organic sphere, they're not.
Yeah.
There's no reason really to risk even the extra savings are not worth it. So I'll just stick to organic.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel. I mean, I can't guarantee that because it's organic, it's better. I wish I could, but I really, really lean towards it. A lot of organic labels are still big, big producers. But I also realize in the real world, we can't always buy local. I'd love to be able to buy everything I eat from a local farmer. And I try hard, but that's not the real world. And when you're on the road, I know it's even more difficult. But if I can get to a Whole Foods and they have their whole rating system from 1 to 5 on their meat, I will buy the highest number on that scale I can get. So I do think there is a difference. So for me, I'll spend the extra money. Let's go to Montana. Troy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing today over there in
Oregon? Good.
I'm doing better since last year when I got hurt. So here's my question on my pickup truck. I know you guys been saying for the Class 8 vehicles for the bypass oil filter thing. For the Class 8 trucks. I do about 15,000 to 20,000 miles on my pickup truck yearly. Would that bypass system help on my pickup truck?
That's a good question. Yes, it will help. I think any engine that has oil in it benefits from bypass filtration. Everything we know about oil screams the cleaner you keep that oil, the better it is for the engine. So there's no question a bypass system is going to keep the oil cleaner. What it comes down to, the real question now becomes, is it cost effective? How much do I want to spend to protect my engine? On a Class 8 truck, it's a slam dunk. If you don't have a bypass filter on a Class 8 truck, in my opinion, you're screwing up because the break-even point is less than 6 months. But on a pickup truck or a vehicle where we're only putting, for example, I'll tell you right now, on my coach, I don't have a bypass filter on my coach. I'll eventually put one on when I get around to it, but I only put about 10 or 15,000 miles on it. That means I'm only going to do an oil change once a year anyway. So am I really going to save enough money on that coach? Now, I'll put it on just because I love them and I want one on it, but I'm not in any hurry. So it's the same kind of idea for you. Yes, it would be better. Is it an investment you want to make? Because your payback is probably, your break even is probably more like 3 years on your vehicle. So you're not going to save a bunch of money by putting a bypass system on. You're going to protect the engine. You're going to do less oil changes, no question, but it's going to take you two to 3 years.
That's something I could accept. Even I told my company about that. They prefer to not do it. That's them. That's on them. You know how that is. But I'm just curious about it. You know, it doesn't hurt to ask questions. I've done a few upgrades to it, a few things, but I'm just curious about it. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. No question. It is. It's really good for the engine. It's more convenient. You're not going to have to do as many oil changes, but the numbers are different. The break even takes longer. Again, for me, there's no real financial benefit for me putting the bypass filter on the coach. Honestly, if I put a bypass filter on the coach, and I'm going to, I will probably never change that oil again, ever. I just don't put enough miles on it to at 15,000 miles a year. In 10 years, I'm only going to have 150,000 miles on it. With an OPS, I won't have to change the oil in 10 years. So I'm going to do it, but I'm not going to see a quick break even on it. Let's go to Montana. Fred, welcome to the program.
Am I on?
Yep, you are. What can I help you with today?
Thank you for taking my call, Kevin. I got two questions. One is, when I go through Oregon, how is Oregon charging a fuel tax? I know there's no fuel tax, but what is it that they charge?
Okay, correct. Oregon is the only state in the country that has no fuel tax. What Oregon has instead is a mileage tax. Now, there are some states that have both a mileage tax and a fuel tax. New York comes to mind, I think Kentucky, maybe New Mexico. They have both, but most states only have a fuel tax. Oregon is the only state that has no fuel tax and only a mileage tax. So when you buy fuel in Oregon, there's no fuel tax being charged. So you have to understand that as part of the price. It doesn't change how we decide where to buy fuel. Remember, our formula is always take the pump price, subtract the state tax rate in that state, and that tells you what you're paying for the fuel. You do the same thing in Oregon, except you don't have to do any math. Just look at the pump price, and that tells you what you're paying for fuel because there's no tax on it. The mileage tax is you have to register in the state of Oregon and you get your permit and then you report all your miles to Oregon and you pay the mileage tax.
Oh, okay. Okay, very good. My second question is, I've cut down on carbs and corn quite a bit. I'm eating a lot of tuna with avocado and coconut oil with spices. But I keep getting on my hands locked joints. Why am I getting that and how can I fix that?
So when you say you're are you getting just really stiff and sore joints in your hand?
Well, sometimes they swell a little bit, and then especially overnight when I'm asleep and I wake up, when I bend my fingers, one of my finger joints popped.
Okay.
And so
what we're looking at there is inflammation. And one of the things that causes inflammation in the standard American diet, well, let's talk about two of them. High carbs, and you're already cutting that back, so that's good. The other one is the balance between omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids. Now, moving to tuna fish is a good choice because seafood has a better omega-6 and omega-3 ratio than land animals do. When you're one of the other things we have to watch for, we have to watch for processed foods. If you have any of those in your diet, try to get rid of them. And when you eat the tuna, tell me how you prepare it.
Basically, I just open the can, drink the water, and put avocado oil and coconut oil. And sometimes I buy myself avocados and just eat it with a cracker.
Okay. That's a really good choice. So the next, and how long have you been doing this?
About 2 months.
We should start to see some improvement in joints. And if we haven't, then we would start looking at some other possibilities. One of the things you might want to consider is adding a supplement right now to make sure we get that omega-6 and 3 ratio correct. We carry a supplement called Ultimate EFAs, Essential Fatty Acids, that will help that. I would try that for a little bit and see if that starts to improve it. If it doesn't, then the next most likely cause of pain, inflammation, swelling, the kind of things you're talking about, would be a food sensitivity. And it's surprising how many foods we can be sensitive to that can cause this, and how quickly you can clear it up by eliminating those foods, but we have to know what they are. I mean, I've seen crazy stuff come up on this list, like watermelon. Eggs are actually a really common. So we are now releasing a home food sensitivity test. So we ship the kit out to you. It's kind of like an oil sample. We ship the kit out to you. You do a finger prick to get a little bit of blood. You put the blood on the card. You send the card to the lab. And in about a week or two, we get results and we can analyze it just like an oil sample. And we can find foods in your diet that are aggravating this condition. But I wouldn't do that one yet. I would try the EFA supplement for about a month and let's see if that helps. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go back to Montana. Fred, did that help at all?
Yes, it did. What I do eat for breakfast is a lot of eggs, so maybe I'm sensitive to eggs, so I'm going to cut down on those.
You know, I am getting ready to do this food sensitivity test myself. It's new. It used to be that you have to have blood drawn professionally, like at a doctor's office, and then that would go to the lab. And this is a new test that's available through our supplement company, Biotics, that allows you to do it at home. And it's still a little pricey, but it's cheaper than it used to be, and you don't have to go to the doctor and go through all that stuff. And I'm almost wondering if I might have a sensitivity to eggs as well. And the reason I say that is because the last week or so, I've been eating a lot of eggs because my local sources have just been overrun with eggs. So I've been getting them at a really good price. So I've been eating more of them, and I haven't been feeling all that great. Now, the interesting thing is we tend to think that if a food, you know, if we have a problem with the food, we're going to notice it in our digestion. And I don't. Eggs for me is like one of the easiest foods to eat. I digest them really well. I don't have any digestive issues, but I was starting to feel a little tired, a little achy. And I thought, you know, this might be a food sensitivity. And I was thinking about what I've been eating a lot more of, and it's eggs. So it would really suck if I am sensitive to eggs because I love them. But we also know once you identify a food sensitivity, if we eliminate it from our diet for a while and we clean up a couple other things, many times you can bring that food back in and be okay with it. So you're going to hear us talking a lot more about the food sensitivity testing now that we have that ability. Let's go to Montana. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Talking about the food sensitivity, I have a weird condition. And this only happens when I put on a couple of pounds. After I bathe, the first couple of minutes, my body starts itching. And the itch goes away after a couple of minutes. And this, and if I reduce the weight to my proper weight, that condition goes away. Or even if I have the pounds on, if I take a 30-minute walk and exercise, that problem does not happen when I bathe. And I'm always wondered about it. And I'm just wondering whether I have some kind of a carbohydrate sensitivity when I, like right now, I've been eating a lot of protein, and I know it's being turned into carbohydrates, and I'm beginning to have that itch, which had completely gone. And I haven't put on that much weight. So I'm just wondering what it is.
You know, the food sensitivity tells us a lot. It really does. And like I say, I'm really excited now that we can do this much easier and a little cheaper than we used to be able to. But there might be another issue going on with you. And the walking might give us a clue. Our lymph system, which you don't hardly ever hear doctors talk about, unless we get lymph node cancer, then you hear a lot about it. But otherwise, doctors hardly ever talk about it. It's a pretty important system in our body. It's a part of our immune system, and it moves a lot of stuff around our body. Our lymph system, the lymph is a liquid in our body, and it moves part of our immune system around. It does all kinds of functions, and it's activated by movement. So our lymph system used to be really healthy when we moved a lot, and now we don't move so much anymore. And what happens is our lymph fluid gets a little thick and sluggish, and it doesn't move around our body really well. And that can cause things that you're talking about, like some itching now and then. So movement, exercise, massage really helps with the lymph. Even something like being in a hot tub with the jets on, you know, kind of pounding your body, that gets lymph, you know, moving around. So I think you could have a food allergy or food sensitivity. And the movement, I think, is a clue, though. I think that when you go for a walk, I think that gets the lymph fluid moving, and that helps kind of keep that itching and inflammation in check.
Yeah, the good thing is I know how to deal with it. I just have to find time to exercise. That's about it. And I never get the problem. So, but anyway, I had a second question. I know you, when people call you about the fuel tax and to figure out where you can buy the cheapest fuel, depending on the states that you're going through, I know you have some sort of a reference that you go to. Where can I go to see that?
The easiest place to find it is if you go to our website, letstruck.com, and up at the top, you'll see a tab for solutions. And when you click on that tab or hover over it, one of the options will be fuel price slash tax. Click on that link, and that will take you right to that page. And that page updates every day. So it gives you the...
Hello and welcome. If you're interested in learning about a new way to...
In fact, that was the guy that's on that page that pops up every time you go there, and he kind of explains how it all works. But yeah, so, you know, I'm looking at the page right now. I see updated average fuel prices as of today. Then you see the fuel tax in one column. Then you see the fuel price minus the tax current today. So it's actually, we're a partner with ProMiles, and we offer ProMiles fuel optimization and fuel tax and all that stuff. And ProMiles puts out this page, but we have the link to it on our site.
Okay, because I listened to one of your talks with, I think it was a ProMile where they have a subscription kind of program.
Correct.
For it.
Yep.
Yeah, and I was curious about that. Thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Sure. We're going to head off to Texas. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing great. What can I help you with today?
Yeah, I sent you my cholesterol numbers. I've been eating keto since January, and I was taking a statin. I got my blood work done in February. And then I went off the statin on my own in April, and then I got my blood work done again in September. Some of the numbers went up significantly, and my doctor wasn't real happy with me, but I'd like you to look at them and see what you think.
Yeah, and this is really, really common, because what happens on a ketogenic diet is total cholesterol almost always goes up. And that freaks doctors out, because that's what they've been told to cue in on, is total cholesterol. But I don't even get it. That is such a stupid number to look at. It makes no sense. So we know it's going to go up on a ketogenic diet. That doesn't bother me at all. Here's what we know about cholesterol. We know that HDL is always good. We always want HDL to go up. We know that we always want triglycerides to go down. LDL is the tricky one. Most people believe that LDL is the bad cholesterol and we want it to go down, and that's not true. LDL doesn't tell us enough about what kind of cholesterol it really is. If we want to understand our LDL number, we need to do a further test that breaks it down by particle size. So if we have lots of big, fluffy LDL, then that's not a problem. We can't just look at that one number. So then what the other numbers we look at is the ratio. And I think the most important ratio, and this is based on a lot of research and a lot of doctors who follow this, the most important ratio for your health is triglycerides to HDL. Now, ideally, we really want that number to be under 4. The closer we get to 2 or less, the better. So yours is at 3.3. You're under 4. You are completely normal in the most important number we should be looking at. And how long did you say you've been on the keto diet?
Since January.
So this will continue to get better. And we could also look at maybe improving the quality of the food on your keto diet. But your total cholesterol to HDL ratio is a little high. Your HDL to LDL is a little high, nothing to worry about. But the most important, triglycerides to HDL is excellent. So I wouldn't worry about any of this right now. And if you are going to make any changes, I would look at improving the quality of the fat you're eating. So more grass-fed beef, more grass-fed fats like beef tallow, pork lard, grass-fed butter, coconut oil, avocado oil. Improve the quality of the fats you're eating, and these ratios and numbers will get even better. But they're nothing to worry about. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow for Destination Health.